For a detailed report on the war now raging on several European fronts, the National Broadcasting Company presents the distinguished editor, author, and analyst of the news, H.V. Kaltenborn. Mr. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. Let us, in this evening hour, attempt to summarize what has happened during the day in which three neutral countries were invaded, Luxembourg, Belgium, and Holland, in which there were two cabinet changes, a complete change of leadership in England, and the addition of further parties to the cabinet in France. And let us see first what was the German objective in this first day of the drive into the neutral areas, and what did they accomplish? Germany has two purposes in mind in her striking against these neutral countries. One, to get closer to England, to get bases on the Dutch coast from which her fighters can accompany her bombers on their trips to the English cities. For remember that in Hitler's mind, England is the enemy, and it is against England that he feels that he must strike. That accounts for the much greater emphasis that Germany today placed on her invasion of Holland than that which she placed on the invasion of Belgium. Belgium, of course, is the easy pathway into France. That is the supposedly easy pathway. Certainly, the experience of the first 8 months of war shows that the Maginot Line and the Siegfried Line, too, are too difficult to face when it comes to an offensive under modern conditions. There, the defensive is so strong that the sacrifice required is too great, and neither army has attempted to strike against its opponent on the Western Front. And therefore, it was always expected that when the time came for the all-out war, Germany would strike through Switzerland, through Holland, through Belgium. She has not yet struck through Switzerland. She is making her drive through Holland and Belgium. Her accomplishments are considerable. She succeeded in landing parachute troops in half a dozen Dutch cities, and in two cities, those troops are still strong enough tonight to continue the fight. They are surrounded in Rotterdam. There, they seem to have little chance of success, of even holding out until German troops could reach them to reinforce them. In The Hague, larger numbers of troops were landed. We've just heard that the Germans landed troops at various points on the Dutch coast. That's a shallow, sandy coast, and the Zeeland Islands opposite to it afforded good opportunity for the landing of troops, and it is those troops, together with parachute troops, that have concentrated in an attempt to take the Dutch capital at The Hague. That attempt has not succeeded, but there the Germans are making a strong fight, and it's evident from the dispatches that they hold part of the city. At Rotterdam, they landed troops on the water with seaplanes carrying from 16 to 22 soldiers armed with the latest type of light and heavy machine guns. They went into rubber boats, reached the shore, seized a bridge. Parachute troops also succeeded in seizing the railroad station, succeeded in seizing the great airport. And it is at those three points that they are still established, that they are fighting against constantly increasing Dutch opposition. And it's safe to predict that in Rotterdam, they will be wiped out. At The Hague, there is a greater chance to reinforce them by both water and additional parachute troops, and the fight there may last a little longer. But it's evident that this time, both Britain and France were prepared in a way that they were not prepared either for what happened in Poland or for what happened in Denmark and in Norway. For within 5 hours of the time that the invasion was announced, French and British troops were on their way to support the Dutch and to support the Belgians. They have already reached the front line in both countries, and at this very moment, the Allied troops are fighting shoulder to shoulder against the invader. In addition to that, the Dutch and the Belgians have offered unexpectedly stiff resistance at their frontiers. As we look at the points that have been seized, let us take first Berlin's claims. They claim the capture of Maastricht, Holland. That's 15 miles within the Dutch frontier. They claim that they crossed the Yssel River east of Arnheim, and we heard from Holland itself that they have taken Deventer a little to the north. Now, these two towns are the same distance from the frontier. Remember that the chief defense line of every country begins at some distance within that country. Certainly, it rarely begins closer than 10, 15, 20 miles to the frontier. So it is obvious that the Dutch defenses have not yet been surpassed by these preliminary German victories. They have seized the town of Malmedy. That's 10 miles within the Dutch frontier. And I'm citing now the German claims as they've reached us from Berlin. Malmedy is a town that's particularly interesting to the Germans. It's part of that Eupen Malmedy district, which Belgium took from Germany after the World War. The German troops have passed through Luxembourg, the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, without opposition, for Luxembourg has no army worthy of the name, and they have reached the Belgian frontier. But no sooner had they arrived there than they were met by Allied troops, and some of the strongest fighting that's going on tonight is in that particular area. Now, it's interesting to hear from Berlin that while the German troops launched this blitzkrieg last night, that Adolf Hitler enjoyed a musical film, The Student Prince, in a Nazi version, and that Goering and Goebbels attended the first performance in Berlin of Mussolini's drama, Cavour. Cavour, who was one of the creators of Italian Union, a champion of Italian liberty. And Berlin also has given us its reaction to the substitution of Churchill for Chamberlain. Here is the way one Berlin news agency put it. The good old fellow with the umbrella and the prayer book is gone and is succeeded by the representative of the most brutal imperialistic policies who intends to partition Germany. And it's interesting, too, that the reaction from Rome, as expressed by Virginia Guida, is, and I'm quoting Mr. Guida's article, "Germany, again, has won the contest of speed. But to us, who have watched the dispatches as they've come in from early morning, that is not apparent. On the contrary, for the first time, German speed and German organization, and there is no denying the efficiency with which Germany has launched this third blitzkrieg of the war, that has not been as effective as it has been in the past. 1,000 German planes were engaged in activity against France, Belgium, Luxembourg, England today. And Germany struck with those planes at a great many different points in order to confuse her opponents, in order not to let them know whether it was against the Maginot Line or perhaps against England that she was striking. But they were only raids. There's been no military action. The raids were relatively unimportant, and she has concentrated most of her air power against Holland and Belgium, and particularly against Holland. But both Belgium and Holland were prepared, as Denmark and Norway and even Poland were not, for they had traps, barricades, bridges, all ready to stop the German advance. They knew which way they were coming. They guessed that they would follow the 1914 line of invasion from Aix-la-Chapelle, and in that they were right. And, as Defense Minister Denis told the Belgian House this afternoon, the Germans failed to gain the initial success. Certainly, in Belgium, their drive has not advanced any distance. The only claims of real advance made by the Germans are in Holland, and they are not in any crucial area. Thus far, the Nazis have not penetrated the water defenses of the Dutch. They have not attempted to invade the flat northern part of the country where invasion is comparatively easy, but where it is strategically relatively unimportant. They have tried to strike in a straight line down towards Amsterdam and Rotterdam, undoubtedly to join the forces which they landed by parachutes and seaplanes in that area. The British troops, with unexpected promptness, have already landed at several points on the Netherlands coast. One detachment passed through Amsterdam hours ago, and by this time has reached the frontier. This is evidence of British control of the air, and of the sea off the Dutch coast. And that is a tremendously important factor because the British will continue to send reinforcements that way direct from Britain, in addition to the Mobile Army of perhaps 500,000 men that the French and British had organized and had faced on the French city of Lille in order to be ready for exactly what has happened today. Thus far, in no place have the Nazis been able to link up the scattered detachments which they have landed behind the Dutch lines by their parachutes and by the planes that were able to land on the Dutch rivers, canals, and on the sea coast. The Dutch commander-in-chief, General Winckelmann, has issued an order of the day to his troops in which he expresses Queen Wilhelmina's gratification at the way the Netherlands troops have resisted invasion. And he says that by this resistance, the surprise attack of the enemy can be considered a failure. And when we think of what happened today, perhaps we should reflect for just a moment on the fact that the German Kaiser sought safety in Holland. France announces that many of her civilians have been killed, 38 killed in one place, several hundred injured by bombing raids. But on the basis of the evidence, as it has come to me, I do not believe that so far there has been any intentional bombing of civilians. Now, obviously, you can't send 1,000 planes over neutral countries without killing civilians if they drop bombs. And obviously, when you are aiming at a military objective such as an airport just outside of a town, you're killing civilians when you land bombs on or near that airport. But on the basis of the evidence in hand, one cannot say definitely that either that Germany or the Allies are deliberately bombing open cities. Germany has claimed that the Allies bombed Freiburg. It's always possible, of course, for an aviator to mistake his objective. It's well to emphasize that, for this war is bad enough as it is without bringing the additional horror of reprisals for the bombing of civilians. And there have been exchanges today between the capitals of the different countries in which there were charges and countercharges of such bombings. Premier Reno has reorganized his cabinet by bringing in the parties of the right. In London, in one of those historic broadcasts which have been coming to us since these crises began, Neville Chamberlain explained why he was leaving the premiership. He spoke in a broken voice, the broken voice of a tired, defeated old man who feels that his honest effort has been all for naught. He lost the peace, and it seemed certainly in Norway that he was losing the war. And so his people asked him to retire, and, like a good patriot, he responded to their wishes. Mr. Churchill, who is to be the next Prime Minister, has asked him to continue to serve, and perhaps he will return to his post as Chancellor of the Exchequer, which he handled with conspicuous success before he became Prime Minister 3 years ago. It's quite possible, too, that Liberal leader Sinclair and Clement Attlee, the Labour leader, will join the cabinet. Sir Samuel Hoare and Sir John Simon, who are distinctly unpopular, will probably leave the cabinet. In our own country, it's quite natural that strong feeling has been expressed by members of Congress against the German invasion of these three neutral countries. We've had some strong statements from Senator King, from Senator Glass, who say that now we should help those countries with everything that we can give them, short of sending an expeditionary force. President Roosevelt was pressed tonight by the correspondents for his opinion, and he said that he was in full sympathy with Queen Wilhelmina's appeal to her people to resist invasion, but added that he sees no reason to change his belief that the United States can stay out of the war.
You just heard an analysis of the latest news events by H.B. Kaltenborn, distinguished author, editor, and analyst of the news. This is the National Broadcasting Company.